Hello and welcome to The Inner Gamer, episode 167. We are your weekly dose of video game news, reviews, opinions, and discussions made for and by our listeners. My name is Brady Noski.
And I'm Austin Morales. And today on The Inner Gamer, we have spoiler-free God of War. Our thoughts, our opinions, our greatest dreams come true in a video game realized.
Come here, boy.
By Santa Monica Studios. And in the gaming news, Call of Duty may not have a solo campaign. PUBG is getting underground cave system, and Campo Santo is merging with a PC giant and is going to make great things. Great
that
little babies.
May also involve plumbing.
Damn it, Brett, you gave it away. And for our discussion topic, we're going to do FPS games need a single player campaign? So without further ado, cue the music.
Hey guys, this is Carolina Rabassa. I do the voice of Sombra, and right now you are listening to The Inner Gamer.
Hi, this is Charlotte Chung, the voice of D.Va. I play to win, and you're listening to The Inner Gamer Podcast. Winky face.
It's Chris Parson here. I'm the voice of Junkrat, and you are listening to The Inner Gamer.
Just remember, it's a perfect day for some mayhem.
Hey, what's up, everybody? It's Josh Peterzorf. You know me best as Roadhog, the one-man apocalypse. Reminding you, The Inner Gamer, check it out. Amazing podcast. All the guys, class act, one-man apocalypse. Yeah.
Yo, it's Johnny Cruz, and you're listening to The Inner Gamer.
It is April 24th, 2018. Welcome to The Inner Gamer Podcast. If you enjoy this podcast, we'd love for you to support us on Patreon. Head on over to theinnergamer.net and click donate to contribute. You can donate as little as a dollar a month or as much as $100 a month or even more than that if you'd like to, and you'll get some awesome rewards. In addition to that, I want to let everybody know you're listening to this on April 24th. On April 27th, if you're in Dallas-Fort Worth, please come out to our event, Community Brewery in Dallas. We will have video games. We will have virtual reality. We will have beer. We will have tacos. We will have fun people to interact and socialize with. Does that sound good to you, Austin?
Oh, man. I can't wait.
Oh, my gosh.
I've been waiting for this. Like, I've been waiting for God of War.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like, I mean, but really, though, like, you've probably been waiting on this event more than God of War. Like, I would say that that's definitely the case, right?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, fuck that. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, so anyway, come on out. Check us out on facebook.com/TheInnerGamerPodcast. You can go there and, RSVP, check out all the details behind it. We'd love to see you there. It's free to attend. And if you're a Patreon subscriber, you get a free beer from us. So you might as well donate to our Patreon. Just saying. Anyway.
For $1, or does it have to be $5?
We can just do $1 for now.
Okay. Donate $1, come out on Friday.
But it has to process. So that means like you will get an IOU. Okay. We'll see.
That's horrible marketing, Brad.
I know. It's terrible. So anyway, let's talk about something that happened this week. We had two games come out last week. We had Nintendo Labo, and then we had something else that maybe one of the most special things that's happened in a long time. God of War.
The Big Kahuna. I watched the E3 trailer for this when they did it live.
Yeah.
At E3, and it still gives me goosebumps to just watch that. And I don't know if you played any God of War.
I've never played a God of War in my entire life. I know nothing about it other than I know it's a melee fighting game and you have Kratos as the main character.
Right.
So I was going in blind to this game, and I've been thinking so long about how to talk about this game, and I still don't know if I can give it justice enough to talk about just how incredible this game is.
You can.
I
believe in you.
I guess, yeah. So
anyway, so I was watching the E3 trailer and just listening to the people freak out because, you know, lifelong fans of this game. You know, it's one of those cult followings that, you know, lots of people have played, I guess. I don't know.
Been around for a long time.
Yeah. Six games. I thought there was only three because, yeah, you know, crazy. God of War 1-3. Yeah. I didn't realize that there was like three other ones. Anyway.
Hell yeah.
I did like the whole like looking back at all these God of Wars and did like a summary of all of them. And, you know, they're pretty interesting. I definitely couldn't get into them now. Oh, obviously the graphics and stuff. I'm sure back then they were like quite amazing. But I hear God of 3 had some pretty interesting stuff. I remember watching trailers for that. Anyway,
first one came out in 2005. Man, so 13 years ago. It's crazy. So they've had a lot of content between then 14. And now. I was 15. Yeah. Anyway, so man, God of War. So this game.
So have you been hyped for it? Like, I know everyone's kind of been like, oh, I can't wait to get this game, but.
Yeah, I've been mediocre. I didn't want to hype myself too much because I just wanted to kind of go in there and be like, just not have any overly high expectations.
Right. So it's easier for us since we haven't played anything.
Yeah.
But I mean, this last two weeks, hearing all these reviews saying it's 10 out of 10, 9 out of 10, like the best game ever made. I was like, man, how am I supposed to not go into this game without feeling some sort of like, oh man, I expect so much.
So here's the thing with me is like, I did look at the 10 out of 10s and stuff like that, but I never read the reviews.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
And I never watched any videos of any kind related to this game other than the trailer, the trailers that they brought out as Santa Monica Studios. So I went into this game very fresh.
Just fantastic trailers.
Very good stuff. Yeah. And I want to preface before we jump too far into like what this game is about and why it's so awesome. Corey Barlog, the director of this game, this was something that was a very personal project for him. They spent 5 years developing this game. And
it seems like it took longer.
Oh, yeah.
Like this game is
crazy. I mean, their team was massive. I mean, Santa Monica is a big studio. So they had everybody working around the clock to bring this out. And he put out a video on YouTube, on his own YouTube channel, basically showing his first reaction to the game reviews. And like, he literally like teared up and started crying because he was just so proud. And he was like basically in tears, was like, I'm so glad I didn't fuck this up. Like, cause there was so much riding on it.
Yeah.
And for that was apparently he said that he wasn't sure if he was going to put that video out or not. But for him, he wanted to put that vulnerability out online for his son, because that's what this whole game is basically centered around, is that during the early part of the production, like he had a kid and now he's got his own son. And this is literally a personal project that relates to his own life. And a lot of his own life and raising his child was put into this game. And for that, like, there's a reason why it's a 10 out of 10. It's not just because it's a good game. It's because there is some true deep passion into this. Like this was a personal story. It wasn't something that was, let's make something that we think is going to make money. This was, I have to do this. Like that's that kind of attitude. So, so let's talk about God of War, man.
Oh man.
So
where do we begin? I'll start with this.
Yeah.
I personally believe it's a 10 out of 10.
Okay.
And you're on the fence. You haven't played that much. I played about 12 hours. Brett's played about.
I definitely think this is
three,
very, very much one of the top two contenders. I mean, I would say this as of right now, this is definitely a game of the year game.
Oh,
and
I mean,
it probably will stay that way. Yeah. Like, it's going to be hard. Red Dead Redemption has a lot to live up to at this point to beat this game, because
a lot. Like, I don't know how you live up to this game.
There's so much to the. So if I were to compare, like, kind of classify how this game falls into other games and everything, I feel like this is the best of Uncharted, the best of Horizon Zero Dawn, and the best of Dark Souls all mashed into one. So it has some, like, the combat is very Dark Souls. The world building is very much Horizon Zero Dawn.
To a degree. You might think it's like fully on, but I mean, the open world in this is not. Like, Horizon Zero Dawn is super open world.
I don't mean that surface level. I'm talking like the details. Like, the details around how they developed the world. Like,
if you
walk around in Horizon Zero Dawn and you see, like, just look out at the expanse, like, there is some deep thought to every single piece of the region that it shows up in this game. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's not that just that it's a big, huge, vast world. I'm just saying, like, the love and care that they put into making sure that this world had a purpose and every piece of it had a purpose. Like, there's nothing in here that's fluff. That's just like unused real estate. It's like, it's there to do some kind of thing to the character and send some kind of message or whatever. And then Uncharted and like some of the gameplay elements and just the interactions between the characters, because Uncharted, you know, does a really good job with like character interactions and stuff like that. And then they also have some of the little tropes of like, I'm going to hold up this rock while Atreus walks underneath this thing, or you pull the chain down and help me up kind of deal. So those kind of things are like totally Uncharted.
That's very Last of Us as well.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, anyway, I'm going to stop talking for a second, let you take over for a little bit.
Cool. So jumping into this game, I had no sense of, you know, I mean, I watched, you know, what happened in the last God of War games. What, you know, it was very like surface level, like this is the story. Okay, cool. So I jumped into it. But already from the get go, and like we've talked about in the podcast before, that dynamic between Atreus and Kratos is this awesome mesh of something great, which I think more men understand and more guys like feel for the story because of this. Obviously there's a mother aspect in it, but like already that like has me by the heartstrings, which is makes for a very powerful thing, because only other game I can remember was The Last of Us, who had that kind of aspect of you know a father and a child type thing. Yeah. With Ellie.
And I think that's so, yeah, that's a good analogy, because that's basically what this interaction is. And I haven't played The Last of Us, so I don't really understand that part. But what I think is important for games to understand, and what most games get lost in, is this the idea of scope creep. And in this case, in a sense, what story scope creep. So like letting too much stuff like build up as you like start building something, you're like, oh my gosh, this is a cool idea. Let's throw this in. Let's throw this in. Like Kickstarters fall into that issue.
I gotcha.
And that's why they never get completed, because scope creep happens. In this case, it can be a story creep kind of thing. But what this game does so well is that they start with a central idea, and they made sure that that central idea was always the central point of this entire game. So like, regardless of like the world that's around you, the combat, on like every story bit that you get out of this game, it all comes back to the central point of, this is a story about a father and a son in a hostile world, and how he is teaching his son to be the man that he has become, in a way. And you know, it's
like,
this is personal,
a true story. Like, in comparing it to Far Cry 5, which is this kind of overblown, you know, typical, you're that guy who's going to go in and blow a fucking Rambo everything to some degree. And it's just, to see something so real in a video game is very refreshing. And for it to be the realm of kind of your most awesome dream of being a badass, but still putting in that human aspect, just makes this a 10 out of 10. Yeah. Like, it's just so real, and like you feel it, like every moment is this very impactful thing, because if you're not fighting something, you're talking to your son and you're teaching him something, and like you want to dive into their past and what their future might be, and you know, where are they at right now dynamically, and trying to just weave through this world of all the other things around them and put it all together, which for me, just, you know, it's very refreshing to have my mind work that way.
Yeah.
When in a video game, you're like, all right, I go here, I do this. I've done this a million times before in other games. I mean, technically, yeah, you've kind of played this game to some degree with other games, but just the whole other aspect of what's happening in the background really,
yeah,
really just, oof.
And I think that's what makes innovation so special, is that, you know, nothing is ever totally wholly original and everything, but what makes innovation successful is that you can come and take pieces of so many different things and build something new and fresh out of it. And that's what this game has done, is like, it has pieces of every big game out there, but they take all these pieces and intersect them in such a great way that makes it a new experience that you've never had before, that's like incredibly refreshing. And they have, I mean, it's all the good stuff, it's none of the bad stuff. And that's really cool. Like, one of the things that I really liked about this game is the way that they, because again, like, I don't know the story of God of War. I don't know who Kratos is, other than he's a god.
Right.
You know, but like that opening sequence, right when you start in the game, you're sitting there and it's like, press the trigger to chop at this tree. And they tell you that, and you're like, okay. And it's just like a screen where he's just standing there looking down at this tree, and you just keep pressing it, chop, chop, chop. And then it eventually falls down, and then he goes up over there, and he just like literally picks up the big, huge, massive tree trunk.
By the way, this is not spoilery. This is literally the first scene, but it's like,
this is the first 3 minutes of the game.
Yeah, it's nothing too crazy.
He lifts up the tree trunk and puts it on his shoulder, and then holds with one hand and walks to the canoe.
Like, you automatically know who this guy is.
Like, you know, right there, this guy is not fully human. Like, he is I mean,
a badass,
a total badass.
He one hands the tree and puts it on his shoulder.
I'm like, damn, it's amazing. And then when his kid pops in there, I was like, yes, that was, that's just all of that was great.
Right.
And then how he like, just there's so much goodness in this game. Like the way that he tries to train his kid, and you can tell that he is there. There's moments in there. And again, this isn't going to be spoiler or anything like that, but I love the little nuggets of detail that they put into this to make the story so special. And that, gosh, I'm like, I've never been this excited about a game to talk about before.
You sure it's not a 10 out of 10?
I mean, it probably is, honestly.
He hasn't got very far yet.
But there is, I mean, I've played about probably four hours, I guess, stuff like that. But yeah, it's long game. But anyway, there's these parts where, like, you know, he is, I'm not going to spoil the story, but he is the father to this kid, right? And there's moments.
Well, if you watch the trailer, I think everything we're going to talk about is basically in the trailer.
Okay.
Like, there's not. And they basically lay out the whole story that way.
Yeah.
If you're clever enough to kind of figure it out.
So there's a moment where he's up there. You're helping your child hunt. Like you're trying to like hunt this boar or whatever. And he shoots. And at this point, he's like, I can do this. I can do this, Dad. You don't have to help me or whatever. So you go in there, you shoot the boar. The arrow knocks off, and you can tell the kid is so defeated. Like it just happened, and he's just like so sad. And there's this part where like you can see, because you're looking from behind Kratos and behind Atreus, and Atreus is in front of him, and Kratos like reaches up with his big, massive, hulking hands, and it's like he's about to like, you know,
comfort him,
and put him at ease, and then he holds back, and I'm like, fuck, that is so good.
Yeah, there's
like because he wants to do it. You can tell he's got that heart, but he's like, no, I have to maintain my disciplinary, I have to make him strong. And
well, because he's so crazy. I mean, for those who know who he was in the past, you know, this is not the Kratos that everybody knows.
Right.
So like he's fighting with himself inside.
Yeah.
And, I mean, the whole story is about kind of chipping away at that, you know,
that thick skin or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Getting past that hide.
Getting to the vulnerability inside.
Yeah.
But
he doesn't get too vulnerable. Just say that.
Yeah. Yeah. So
he's able to.
Story is great and everything. Let's talk about gameplay and stuff like that for a little bit, because that's something else that has shifted a lot. Because from my understanding, like God of War is a hack and slash video game, right? Where it's like, in my mind, like you just go in there, kind of like Assassin's Creed used to be, where it's just, I mean, it's hammering stuff, doing a lot of crazy combos, and it's fast combat, I think, is what I understand from before. Now it's like much slower, much more methodical, much more Dark Souls.
Yeah.
Like you parry, you time your attacks,
you dodge, you got shields for blocking
around your characters. Yeah, you got shields. You do still have combos, and the combos you level up with abilities and stuff like that, which I also really love the ability system, because it's just complicated enough
to
make it interesting. Mm-hmm. But I get it, and that's refreshing.
Right.
Like I understand it. So, yeah, I mean, what do you think of the combat system?
Oh, I love it. At first, it was actually very overwhelming, because like I got used to what I had, and I like having some restrictions to some degree. And then you start getting the you find these, I forgot what they're called.
Like the runes or the enchantments?
Yeah, they're the runes. Yeah. So you find these runes that you can put in your axe.
Yeah, I think the runes or runic or something like that.
Something like that. You put these abilities in your axe to do like your special move. You have like a light special move and a heavy special move. So I think the first two you start out with, you raise your axe up and it like shoots this blast out, knocking everyone
back.
It's
like a freeze blast.
Yeah, and it slightly damages them, but it's more of like a stun. So it allows you to like back people off of you and get your footing. And the other one, you can slam down, and it's another AoE, which blasts people back, but does even more damage, and I think stuns them longer. It just adds more stun to them. And
it can kill them, too. Like, I've the Draugrs, or whatever they're called, the very light, simple, like, characters or whatever.
Draugrs.
Like, yeah, the Draugrs. I can go up there with the hold L1 and hit R1 to do that freeze blast thing, and it'll kill three of them right off the bat. So it knocks them out pretty good. But yeah,
I don't think I use them until like way later.
You forget sometimes because you're like heavily in combat. But I use that as like a starter move. Like I jump in there, I launch that blast, and then I like do all my parries and then like my attacks. And then I love the there's a thing when you're fighting, like usually, or actually any character, I think. But if you put them down enough health, I think they have to be down to like a fourth health or whatever. Then you press R3 and it does this cool finishing move where it just, you go up to them and just like twist their head and like rip their head off or whatever. Yeah. I did that to a troll and I was like, fuck yes, it's so good.
Yeah, so the combat is very fluid and it has a lot of cool moments and allows you to do a lot of these cool, like, I don't want to say quick time events, but allows you to go into these like mini cutscenes where you kill something, and it's very, very satisfying. And I wish, I kind of wish Dark Souls had that to some degree, but you know, I'm glad it's in God of War. Yeah. But you have the stun thing where eventually Atreus can start doing the stun, and he'll stun these enemies, so you can run up to him and do these quick little cutscene kills. And you can do it too by hitting people with your shield and your hands and your axe and stuff like that. So it's really, I really enjoy that, because now, like, as you get later into the game, you start using that to your advantage and you can really rack those up and kill a lot of enemies once they get stunned. And
right.
And plus it allows you to get out of combat for a brief second so you can catch your breath and then jump back in, because some of these battles later on, they get pretty tough. They throw a lot of enemies at you.
Yeah.
And it's, it's intense. And plus you get new abilities for your axe and stuff like that. Like one now that I use a lot is I throw my axe down behind me and I drag it forward and it shoots this like line of ice, daggers. So it hits them multiple, it can hit one or many enemies multiple times and then throws them back. So it gets them away from me and it damages them. And so, yeah, it's a lot of fun. The combat's fun. But tell me this, Brett.
Yes.
We had the gravity gun. We have other weapons that I can't think of right now, but this axe has to be up there as one of the top weapons in video games ever.
Oh yeah. No,
like,
yeah.
That feeling, because I don't know, when I first started using it, I threw it and I was like, fuck. You know?
Yeah.
You're getting your footing, you're just getting in the battle, but when you learn to pull that thing back, it is the most satisfying thing.
I will say that is one ever. Like piece of that, like, if there's one nugget that I got about the game before I started the game that I'm glad I learned about, it was how to use the axe properly. So I was listening again to Corey Barlog, because he was on a bunch of interviews at a bunch of different places.
Right.
And they talked about like the axe, the mechanic of the axe was like one of the first things that they developed.
Right.
They were like sitting down. They were like, okay, let's talk about gameplay. They wrote everything they possibly had in any previous game on the board. And they were like, let's cut everything out. And just like, do we need this? Do we need this? Do we need this? No. And then the one thing that stayed up there was like this like retractable axe thing. And it's such a cool mechanic. In that, I mean, use it for puzzles, but like being able to like throw it out at a draugr or whatever, and then like see like three enemies around and move over knowing where the axe landed and like press the triangle to like retract it back and then slice through three enemies as it comes back to you. Like, yes.
Yeah.
So strategic. Yes. It's so good.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so I many times I'll throw it at one, freeze them, right? And then I'll run up to some other enemies, beat them up, and then as they get knocked back, I'll call my axe back, killing the one I had threw at already. Yeah. And he's frozen, so he can't do shit. And then I'll throw it at somebody else, and then it's just this constant like boomerang thing.
Yeah.
But the sound of it actually coming back and hitting your hand. Oh.
Well, and the fact too that like you are also super powerful and you almost have to sometimes just use your straight up fist. Because frozen guys, like,
right.
You can't fight them with an axe, so you use your fist to fight them. So you can throw your axe out there at some guys, punch your fist for a little bit, and then be like, oh yeah, I got an axe out there, pull it back and then kill two more guys as you run around.
So I call them elemental enemies, because there's your normal draugr, which I guess technically they're fire, but then you have some that are poison, you have some that are ice, and I guess that's all three of them. And so like for the ice, you can't use your axe because your axe is made of ice, so it doesn't just bounces off of them, but all the other ones you can use. But the combat is pretty, pretty satisfying once you start getting the rhythm of it. It took me a little bit to kind of get that rhythm of how to get into it. It's very different from Dark Souls, but it's very Dark Souls all at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sure Devin would have an easier time playing this game than me or you.
Yeah.
Like right off the bat.
Then they have the skills and they have the armor upgrades and stuff like that. So like you said earlier, you have the rune things you can add to your weapons. And I like that it's not... Like, there's a whole bunch of, like, you have to get hack silver from out in the world to use this money to upgrade stuff later on. And they have a very simple-ish upgrade system where there's, like, seven different ability types that, you know, when you upgrade your, you know, you can decide whether you want to increase your strength solely, or if you want to increase some of your strength and some of your defense, or if you want to increase some of your luck and your charisma and all these different types of things. You can do that based on the upgrades and then the the sockets that you fill. It's a that was the sockets that.
Well, they got sockets in. Well, they got sockets in the armor.
Then the armor.
And then you got sockets for runes, I guess.
Yeah, you got the rune things you do, and then you can add an ability like a talisman or whatever that's like a overall character ability or something like that.
What do you know what you're using right now?
No. Just whatever the first thing was that they gave me, I think.
So mine's really cool. If I dodge just perfectly, it slows down time for like 2 seconds. Oh. So I'm able to run behind my enemy as they're finishing their move, and I can start attacking him off the bat.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. So it's cool to chain that too, because like, you know, I'll dodge, hit, they come back around and try to hit me again. And I've gotten to the point now where like I'm pretty good with dodging people behind me.
Yeah.
So like I'll dodge them, it'll freeze time. I'll hit that just dodge. That's nice. Freeze. So it get pretty cool, especially chaining the stuff together. But it's very chaining is I think is pretty high level for this. At least I think so.
Oh yeah.
I don't know about you.
I know, I agree.
Anyway.
Yeah, it's inventory. I don't do a good job with that a lot, but it's still really cool to do that. And they have the skill upgrades and everything. So you can like upgrade your like close combat, you can upgrade your shield combat, you can upgrade your range combat, you can upgrade Atreus's combat, like all these different things with different upgrades, and it's just based on experience points.
Right.
So there's no like, I mean, there's the hack silver, which is the cash stuff, and then you have your experience points you get for what like killing people, everybody gives you experience for completing a mission, you get experience points, all that stuff you can use to then upgrade to make
early on the experience it's
stuff better.
Experience points seem very hard to come by.
Oh, I agree.
In a
completely.
Sense. I've gotten to the point where all my stuff is pretty much upgraded now.
Yeah.
And I guess I'm about 12 hours in. So, but like, yeah, the first, like right off the bat, you really choose wisely what you want to get. I didn't even choose anything at first. I was like, I need to let these things kind of, you know,
I did a little bit of stuff. I worked on Atreus first on some of
his
stuff.
That's a good way to go. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause like, I mean, he's so helpful when he's doing the arrows. Like,
oh, just, yeah. Yeah.
So I did something where I think the arrows recharge faster. I don't remember what it was, but
yeah.
Something with the defense on that. Cause I use him distracting enemies a lot. And, and then I upgrade the shield.
Yeah. We also use experience points to upgrade the runes in your axe.
Right. Right.
So it's like this weird balance of, do I want to do, cause they only add like one, like what is it? There's stun, there's attack. I think there's frost damage in these ruins. And so when you upgrade, it only upgrades two of those things.
Yeah.
So it's only one tick. And I think it's up to 5 ticks total. So,
yeah.
And it gets pretty expensive with experience points too.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So it's just like
3,000 or 4,000. Yeah.
Not only, well, thank God you don't have to balance your inventory more or less. You've got to balance your experience points and your cash flow.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that there's no like, there's not really any inventory management per se. It's just you keep upgrading stuff.
Right.
And that's what I want. I don't want to deal with all that inventory bullshit and stuff. And they took that out, which is nice. But
I don't think they have it in there to begin with.
No. Yeah.
Like the old ones.
Yeah.
But some of the armor they have is pretty cool.
Oh, it's badass.
Like,
yeah.
I think the armor of the ancients is what I can get right now, which looks pretty cool. I haven't got it yet.
Yeah.
But in the Dwarven armor is pretty cool. Some of the armor is kind of like, yeah, do I really want that? You know, but.
But if it gives you good strength and defense and stuff, you know, give you good upgrades.
Do the side quests. There's a side quest when you go to the, what was the sea, the lake again?
It's like the nines.
Yeah. If you go there, it gives you a really, really awesome, it's not a hilt, but what is it? The pommel or whatever at the bottom?
Oh yeah. I forgot the name of it.
Yeah. Probably it's pommel. Yeah. And I have not changed that out since I got it.
Yeah.
Because I have a lot. Because as you progress and level up, like more things become unlocked to you. Also with the pommel. And I was just like, man, there's no reason to change this. And it's early on. It's only a green item because you can get it. They have all the colors. They got green, blue, purple, and orange.
Yeah.
Or orange or purple. One of those like goes somewhere like that.
Yeah. But
anyway, side note.
I'd say we can end the discussion at this point, but
I
feel like it's pretty clear to dig, definitely.
Oh, yeah.
This is by far our favorite. Like, I mean, we've had several games that we had high expectations for, like Sea of Thieves and then Far Cry 5 and Monster Hunter World, but like Monster Hunter World was our like candidate, but I feel like this is better. I mean, this is definitely surpassed it. I mean, Monster Hunter is great. And it's a great co-op game, but man, this game is just something special.
This is what console games should be.
Yeah.
This is why you should want to own a console on top if you already have a PC. Because nowadays, you know, you get all these games on console or PC, but Growing up, I remember I got console because there were certain games that came to that console that you wanted to play, like such as Halo. And I think I hope more studios start looking at this, especially like Xbox, because I mean PlayStation's already killing it, and seeing the dynamic of having and the reward of having something special like this, and trying to cultivate that in other games, you know.
Right.
So I feel like from this point forward, I mean, I think PlayStation already knew this was going to be a huge success, and I hope more games, and I hope new titles like this come out that can like push that envelope a little more.
Yeah.
Because this is why you need a console. This is why I buy consoles.
Yeah.
It's not just to play games, it's to play unique, special games I can only find there.
Yeah. And this is definitely a unique, special game.
Oh, man.
Is up there in the regards to Last of Us and, you know, Red Dead Redemption and all the top titles that have been out over the years. It's going to be remembered for a long time.
Oh yeah,
for sure. So
go buy it.
That is going to be it for the games we play. Please stay tuned for our video game news. We have a lot to talk about with Battle Royale stuff and more new maps for different games and all kinds of good stuff. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
You're listening to The Inner Gamer.
It is time for our gaming news. In this segment, we share the best headlines from the week in the gaming industry. And first up, we have some news of Battle Royale finally making its way to AAA games.
Man, Brett, if we made a bet, you would be winning all the money right now.
I know, man. And then
you should have betted us.
There's so many of them. Like, they're taking over this year. 2018 is like the year of Battle Royale and badass story games like God of War, like we just talked about.
So we went from open world, all games being open world, to now all games wanting to be Battle Royale.
Yeah. So there's sources that have come out that say that the next Call of Duty, Call of Duty Black Ops 4, which a lot of people actually enjoy the story of, will not have a solo campaign. They're going to eradicate the single player and focus entirely on multiplayer and cooperative stuff with zombies and the addition of potentially a Battle Royale mode.
Interesting.
So there isn't any information necessarily about what it would look like with Call of Duty and Battle Royale, but I mean, it's pretty easy to expect that it's not hard to make a case in this world that you're in a plane and you're dropping out in a parachute and you're in an open world. But what's interesting about this is that Call of Duty has never made open world kinds of expanses like the likes of Fortnite and PUBG. So if they do this, they're going to have to hire new people, because everybody that's on their team is used to making linear experiences like through and through. So that'll be kind of curious to see how they approach that, if they do approach in that manner. Like, I mean, Battle Royale has to be a big, massive open world. Now, I will say that Treyarch, which is one's developing this game, did make Call of Duty World at War back in the day, and that game did have a open world sense to it because they were responding to Battlefield 1942, which was this open expansive map that had tanks and planes and all that stuff.
Right,
so World
right.
of War came out and took Call of Duty to an area in multiplayer where you could drive tanks and you could drive jeeps and stuff in these larger maps. They weren't huge, but they were bigger than a standard Call of Duty map.
Right.
And after that, it was all like confined and condensed.
Right.
So, I don't know. What do you think about Call of Duty Battle Royale?
I mean, there's a blueprint for it, and I think it's already been kind of defined to some degree. Give it to a big studio, they may succeed in this, as they don't succeed so much when it comes to an actual campaign. So it's very possible that they can actually make something interesting out of this. I don't know.
Yeah,
they have the resources to do it.
No,
and it'd be like, what are you talking about? What?
We decided we're gonna do the single player discussion, right? Okay, cool. Because I'm not going to talk about that here then.
Okay.
Because I was going to talk about single player stuff and everything, but I'll save that.
Okay, cool.
But yeah, I mean, they do definitely have the resources for sure. And they are, I mean, Call of Duty totally is like, people buy Call of Duty for multiplayer. And
right.
people are also playing a lot of Battle Royale games. However, here's the one caveat to this is that PUBG was cheap. It's $30, right? Fortnite was free. So they're in a situation where will people buy a $60 AAA Battle Royale game? Or are they going to have to
strictly multiplayer?
Look at, like, there was a point in time where they were revisiting the idea of, well, maybe we should sell the single player for $20. Maybe we should sell the multiplayer for $40 and make them reduce prices and just see what happens. That was a conversation that was happening around like Modern Warfare 2 or something like that. And it never happened, but it might be something for them to look at again this time. But will Activision be willing to lower the cost of their
franchise? They would have to. There's just no
franchise.
There's just no way. And I think all around, I mean, you go to Steam, you go to, you know, the eShop on Nintendo Switch, like all these games, which some you can argue have the heart, well, I won't say the heart, but the like kind of the scope in some sense of AAA title. And they're like $40, $30, $25, like pretty cheap. Like I feel like the prices are starting to really get down there. So for them to charge $60 for just single player, I mean, multiplayer, that's just ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, unless they,
there's no way.
I mean, like think about,
no way.
Like what they could do,
no
is,
way.
Is,
it can't be more
than, like Call of Duty World War II came out. It had zombie mode, it had multiplayer mode, and then it had single player. To justify the price, you know, just devil's advocate here. You have zombie mode, which is probably more fully featured than the last one even was, which had a campaign-ish kind of thing. You'd have your multiplayer, traditional multiplayer, mm-hmm. and you'd have your battle royale. So you'd have three types of gameplay experiences in there, which would just be like having a single-player campaign, sort of, not really. But
I mean, you already get all those plus a campaign with the $60 game, right? So it's
but
just
you don't
kind
get
of
battle royale.
True,
so replacing single-player battle royale.
Look, if they broke it up in like little,
there's
like
actually more time like with battle royale, because
like,
I mean, imagine
here's multiplayer for $40. Now, do you want to get the zombie mode for $10 extra?
Yeah,
and do you want to get battle royale for another $10? And just if they add it on like that, I think you can kind of.
But then it's just loot crates at that point.
It's like, not loot
now
crates.
Now, what you can do is you can sell here, get multiplayer for $10. If you want to add on this map, it's $10. If you want to add on this gun, it's $5. If you want to add on this other map, it's $10. So everything's just an additional like little piecemeal $10 thing. It's like going down a menu. Like,
yeah, I was just trying to give them somewhat of a blueprint that would somewhat make sense in the realm of gamers. And I think that might make sense, but at the same time, you're still fishing
also,
people for money.
It's here's just, the other downfall with that. That's
the only
concern.
Way you can charge $60 in total. You can't. I would not buy $60 right off the bat all this stuff.
Okay. But if you made it piecemeal, like say you made it 20-20-20, right? You're now segmenting your audience.
Yeah.
So with Battlefront, the reason why they got hit so hard is that the first one, you know, you had to pay an extra $50 to play the new map. So then you broke your audience up. So that's why in the second game, they were like, well, all the content's going to be free. Pay $60, you get everything for free because you're not breaking up your audience. So like if your friend buys the $60 game and then your other friend gets $20 game, like that's going to suck because they're only going to be able to play some of the pieces of the game.
That's for them to figure out. I don't know.
Yeah. I don't think that'd be a good solution because it would just for multiplayer, it wouldn't work because some people are going to want to play Battle Royale. Some people are going to want to play the map stuff. But ultimately, I think that they're all going to want to try it. And I think they'd be hurting themselves by selling specific things because not everybody's going to want to buy it just for zombies. Not everybody's going to buy it just for Battle Royale because they never play Battle Royale. So by bulking it all together in one, it allows them to expose people to these different experiences.
I just don't think if they sell for 60, it's just done. Like, who's going to buy that?
Oh,
I mean, people will buy it.
Sold Overwatch
for
60.
True, but I don't think they're going to buy this because
they sold Destiny for 60.
But that technically has story in
it. And that game sucked.
It did suck.
Yeah. Let's see. They sold Battlefield 1 for 60. But granted, that had story to it. But
right.
It was just that part.
Anyway, let's move on.
Rainbow Six Siege, they sold for 60.
Yeah, and it sucked. I know. Now it's good, apparently.
Yeah. Anyway, so speaking of Battle Royale, Battlefield DICE specifically is exploring Battle Royale for Battlefield 5. However, they did say that if they were to include Battlefield Battle Royale, it would not come out at launch. It would be something that would be a post-patch, like post-launch content.
Hopefully free.
But they also may not be looking at it at all for Battlefield 5, but they are prototyping that mode for this game or a future game. So it may not come with this. It could come with Star Wars Battlefront 3. It could come with some other title entirely.
No.
So that's what they're exploring, and they're seeing if it works into the mechanics.
I don't think it would work for this.
They would drop it out.
I don't see it working for Battlefield at all, or Battlefront.
I could see it working for Battlefield. I think it makes perfect sense to drop in that world. Yeah.
As a single person going against
that's what
100
it is anyway.
People?
Yeah.
No, I just don't see it. That's not the game that they've made. That's not the kind of game Battlefield is. Okay, yeah. If it was Bad Company, that's different. That makes sense for that kind of world. But for Battlefield, like any of the Battlefields right now?
I don't really see.
Like the normal Battlefields?
Why would it be any different? It's the same kind of game.
Because when you think of Battlefield, you think of these, you know, giant war scenarios where you go head to head, team A versus team B.
Yeah.
Like that's gotcha. What that is for yeah. me. Bad Company, you kind of have
team A versus team B.
Well, I get that, but it's kind of this weird wonky thing of these futuristic crazy, you know, that whole world that's a little more forgiving in my sense. That universe that they created for Bad Company.
Well, Bad Company is modern. It's not future, it's modern.
What? No, I know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Okay. Did I say future?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, technically it's like
modern day.
Whatever. Yeah. If you agree with me.
Yeah. If you
Twitter
if
Brett at Brett Yanosky, you suck.
B Yanosky.
Whatever.
But yeah, I don't know. I think it's a perfect world because they already have all the mechanics there. I mean, it's a massive war, it's a massive map. It's already got vehicles. You already got parachutes. You already got planes. Like all you got to do is just make it to where instead of it being team versus team, it's just one versus all.
Maybe,
but actually, no, it is team versus team because you already have squads in Battlefield. So, and technically, Battlefield is just a 5-man team fighting off an enemy force. So, as opposed to it being versus 32, it's now versus 95. I think it makes sense for Battlefield. Oh, yeah. In this game, I would. Yeah. I think it makes a lot of sense for Battlefield. It doesn't make sense for Call of Duty.
Prove me wrong, Battlefield.
Yeah.
Prove me wrong.
It makes zero sense for Call of Duty, but for the Battlefield franchise, I think it's the easiest migration to include Battle Royale. Because, I mean, they've had all kinds of different types of game modes where they have Conquest, and then they have the smaller version where they have, like, a Rush, where it's a smaller scale, like, you know, 25 versus 25 or 10v10 or whatever like that. And those are a lot quicker battles, like throwing a battle royale kind of thing in there. But what they would probably do with this that I think would be interesting is making it like Fortnite had their 50 versus 50 kind of scenario. Well, actually that essentially is Battlefield. So for the 50 versus 50 is Battlefield in a way. But I think that if you make it more like, it could be kind of like in war, like you are a squad or a platoon where if you're going out into the field or whatever, it's less, unless you're in a battlefield, like you're fighting in like an actual battle area, you usually are a small squad going against the enemies that could be anywhere. So that would make a lot of sense in the war scenario.
But they did a battle royale-esque. I can dig that.
Yeah.
But not full like one versus 99 people, you know.
No, I don't think they would do a 1v. I think they would still keep the team based, like the squad play would be the primary focus of it.
Okay.
It would just be like you know when we play battle royale. I mean, well, how often do we play battle royale where it's just 1v100? Like
I do.
Well, I never play it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so exactly. It'd be like my experience where it's like. I don't want to touch.
Yeah,
it
no, I understand that. Yeah, yeah. I get it.
So, and cool. I think that's if they look at the statistics, I'd be curious to see what the percentage is of people that play squads versus people that play like solo. I bet it's like 50-50 or it might lean more towards squad or at least duos than it does one versus all. I don't know.
I don't know either. What are your thoughts? Let us know. Hello at theinnergamer.net or send us a tweet at theinnergamer.
Yep. So more on Battle Royale.
Yeah, I know. Just so can't get out of this, Brett.
I had to put this. I mean, this is a common thing. So PUBG's new map is called, it's codenamed Savage right now. And we both play, you played it, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's a lot of fun.
So it's like set in like South, so, like Asia somewhere or something like that. Like Thailand, I believe is like the area that they based it around. And it's a lot smaller, a lot more confined, very tropical-y feeling and everything like that. But they just came out and announced that they're exploring this new component to that map with an underground cave system where when you're parachuting out of your plane, you can drop into this gigantic ass cave and have to fight your way out of the cave. So that's going to be like a central component of this map, which I think is like a super cool concept. Like,
oh, I love it.
Flip Battle Royale on its head.
Well, it's just like adding a pachinki, basically. Like, except being like, hey, right here.
Yeah.
You know, I think that'd be really cool.
But having it to where, like, you know, you can't just hop in a truck and get out. Like, you have to find the exits.
Right.
And then, so you're going to have people like camping the exits, maybe.
They might not
drop out. I mean, it's like, it's going to contain the firefight intensely. But like that whole idea of dropping in like that. Cause like, Aaron Jal or whatever the Erangel or whatever the first map is called has tunnels, but it's like you enter and you exit and they're kind of cave systems, but not really. These are going to be like fully natural, naturally made caves.
So there's
like
three exits,
expanses.
There's some pools in the middle and then there's some stupas, which are like stalagmites going up. Or stalactites going up. Or I know. Are those stupas? Are those actually like, I thought I knew what a stupa was. I don't know what a stupa is.
Good job, Austin.
Where's our historian, damn it?
We have stupas in here. And
I thought there were stalactites going up, but they might be actual like man-made architecture.
A stupa is a mound-like or hemispherical structure containing relics that are used as a place of meditation.
Aha, so it is man-made. So you have these giant stupas along this pool, which everyone will fall into, and I guess there'll be weapons down there for everybody.
Well, so the other thing, too, is that they mention in here that they're going to be, I mean, this is going to be like places that people live in. There's going to be buildings, there's going to be pavilions, there's going to be multi-story stuff. So it's like, it's like another level of the map entirely underground, which is kind of cool. So you'll have battles on top, but then you'll also have battles down below. So like, imagine if, you know, you get to the point where the circle is conjoining in and then conjoins in on that lake thing. Like you could have like 10 people up on top and then 10 people below and then like, but you're still in the circle. So it's like, well, shit, the top's going to have to drop down at some point.
Right.
That's going to suck for the people on top because they're going to be like parachuting down and be like, oh, let's just shoot those guys as they're coming down slowly.
So, can you parachute down from the top or do you just drop and die?
No, yeah, you parachute. I mean, that's how you drop into it. It's just,
oh, I thought you parachute from the plane.
Well, yeah, but I mean, like you can still pull a parachute out after you're like on the ground.
I didn't know that's what it was saying. I was just thinking you come from the plane.
But like, you're going to be able to.
Okay, you better be able to.
Yeah. Or cool. You can come around from the sides if you want to.
Right. There's three entries or exits too.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's cool. I really like it. If you like PUBG, PUBG it up.
There it is. All right, esports, y'all. We're still talking Battle Royale, unfortunately, but it's in the esports realm now.
What is happening to this new segment?
I know. It's tearing us up. Ashland University is a school in Ohio that is now offering scholarships, esports scholarships, for up to $4,000 for Fortnite esports players. So that's
not
a thing.
I'm not too keen about the Fortnite, but I am keen about the scholarship for gamers, which is really awesome.
Well, and they already do that for other games, but they're gonna be the first school in America that is offering a Fortnite scholarship.
Right.
So they do League of Legends, they do StarCraft too. Apparently their team is the 40th in the United States in the StarCraft team, or 40th in the world or something like that. Ranked 40th in the US for esports in StarCraft 2. And they do League of Legends, they have a CSGO team and stuff like that, but now they're adding in Fortnite. And this is the first place to offer Fortnite. So
it's a big deal for that. Recruitment form. That's an interesting title for esport prospectives.
There you go.
To fill out.
Fill it out, Austin. But you're too old. You're already
I can't. I already told you, I can't do Fortnite. I've tried it. I probably could.
It's not that you can't do Fortnite. You just can't do esports. You're too old now.
I guess I am.
What are you like, 29? 30? You're not 30 yet, right?
No, I'm not 30 yet.
Oh, damn.
Shut up, Brett.
Old.
Shut up, Brett.
Crazy. Like, you are aged out of
it already. I have.
That's sad.
What a, like, a quick burn, you know, for a career. I wonder at what point they're
5 years of of time and then it's done. Yeah. It'll expand later on, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They'll have.
They're going to start realizing that they can't hire 19-year-olds anymore because they're too immature. So
yeah,
they're
going to have to open as up we have
age bracket
figured
from 20
out,
to 35 or something.
As we have figured out very quickly in the realm of video games and the internet.
So, anyway, that was pretty cool.
Yep. So we spoke on this a little bit already.
Yeah, we're skipping that. So
okay,
I already
cool.
took it out of the news.
Okay, cool.
Last thing we have, this is super, super exciting. This story just came out yesterday when you guys listened to this 3 days ago. But Campo Santo, the studio behind Firewatch, which was one of my favorite games of 2016, I think it was. Yes, 2016.
Did you find your answer up there?
Yeah, I did. They have been working on a game called In the Valley of Gods. It was released, I believe it was at E3 last year. They released a reveal trailer.
Yes, it was.
Super cool game.
There.
Explorers, two of them exploring.
It's basically the same as the other game.
Yeah, very walking similar-ish, but you have another person in the world with you, which is really cool. They have decided, because of mutual interest in philosophies of game development, that they are going to form their team and join Valve Software. So, In the Valley of Gods will now be a game developed by Campo Santo and produced by Valve. So, they are now a part of the Valve team, and that is very exciting to me because I feel like those two jive well together.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Very much so.
That team.
And they were just waiting for someone to pick them up.
Probably.
And this is the perfect mesh because we talked about it. Valve needs to make more games and they haven't made games in a very long time.
Yeah.
So to see this come about, hopefully we see more of this, which I assume this is like the first step. And
I feel like it probably is because I know that that's what they did with the Portal team. They bought the Portal. They acquired the Portal team from, there was a school project that they're working on.
Yeah.
That was what Portal was. And then they brought them on to Valve to work on that game. And that's also like Dota was a mod that they pulled somebody in to make a game. And now In the Valley of Gods, Campo Santo is another acquired team. So they're really good at like acquiring really smart people to help them build new game experiences. And this is going to be a good game for their library of games because it's awesome. Oh, yeah. And I feel like it fits in that.
I can't wait till Valve has its own like huge, I mean, they already have a pretty decent library, but to see like newer games would be like, you know, you go to the library.
I thought you meant like Steam. I was like, dude, Steam is a huge library.
No. I meant like straight up Valve. Where it's just like you click the Valve title and like this, there are all these AAA, well, I don't say AAA titles, but all these amazing titles, you know, of, you know,
they're kind of like
last year,
the Blizzard of stuff where they don't have a huge library of titles, but every single title that they brought out has been insanely successful.
True. Very true.
So
man, I wonder really who cool. they talked to or like they just picked them up.
I don't know. I mean, I'm sure they were like waiting to have something like that happen for a while.
Yeah. Very true.
But now they're in it. They're with it. And that's going to be awesome. So that will probably speed up the production of this game as well, which is good. So,
well, congrats to them. We actually listened to their podcast. What was it called?
Idle Thumbs,
which now kind of doesn't exist to some degree.
Yeah, they just do like monthly now.
They're actually the reason we kind of started podcasting. Well, it's the reason that I really wanted to start podcasting.
Definitely.
And they help us get this gear that we use, the mics. Like, there's no way we would have got this good of quality. So thanks, Campo Santo.
Yeah, you guys are awesome. Shout out to Chris Remo.
And someone tweet them for us.
Jake Rodkin, all those guys over there. So that's going to be it for our news this week. If there's something that we missed, we want to hear from you. Email us at hello@theinnergamer.net and we'll talk about it next week. Also, don't forget, if you like what you hear, give us a review and rating on iTunes. We're going to be back after the break with our discussion topic on single player games and how they may be dying, but we don't want them to die, and what should and shouldn't be a single player game.
You're listening to The Inner Gamer.
What are we talking about today?
We're talking about video games.
Yes, we are.
Specifically today, we are talking about first-person shooter games or shooter games in general. And do they or do they not need a single-player campaign? So
FPSs.
So we just talked about, if you listen to our podcast, if you're watching this, you didn't listen to our podcast, so you should definitely go over to theinnergamer.net and listen to our podcast. But in our news segment, we talked about Black Ops 4 potentially eradicating single player from their game and just doing Battle Royale instead.
I didn't know it was something that needed to be eradicated, but
eradication.
That is a very strong word, Brett.
Eradication.
We're eradicating.
So
the campaign.
We want to talk about that. Do single first-person shooter games need a single-player campaign? Ooh. Why or why not? So let's open up the conversation with: do shooters need a single-player campaign? Let's look at first-person shooters in general. Like, what do you think?
Let's look.
Like,
do you feel they need? I think. It? I don't. I mean, if you look at the past, like Doom, yeah, right, had a story, had a campaign, had no multiplayer. I think it technically, Halo, if I'm not mistaken, at least for me, was like the first multiplayer FPS that I got to play, and it was like super. Well, I guess not. Yeah. No, it was the first one, I think. Anyway, most like dominant one that I played,
right.
And so, you know, having that shift now, I think we're in a new day and age where technically we might not need it. I mean, I guess it just kind of depends how you look at it, but I think going from the past when it was all story driven mostly to the present where Battle Royale reigns supreme, you know.
What's that?
who wants one or the other? I think some people want both, but now that streaming has become such a giant beast in its own right that people want content faster and want certain dynamics in a game more than others. So I don't know. That's kind of where I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah.
I hope I didn't just blow over the whole conversation. We're done. That's it.
Yeah,
that's all of it.
I was like, all right, well, thanks for listening, everybody. No, I think that there's definitely a, you know, a big transition that's happened in the world of first person shooters, and the emphasis has changed a lot. Because like if we look at Call of Duty specifically, when it started out, like the single player was a crucial component of that game. It wasn't super long. It was like 7 or 8 hours, but like it was a serious, like people bought it to play that first, knock through it real quick, and then jump into multiplayer. But it was like a mandatory thing on almost to let's play single player before we jump into multiplayer and
right.
experience that story.
Right.
And it kind of trailed off after, I want to say, Black Ops 1. To where it was less and less.
It was more of like, we just got to put it in there. It's just something that's been there this whole time.
So it's gone shorter and shorter. So like it's got down to where now it's like a 5 or 6 hour campaign, if that.
If that.
And they put a lot of, I mean, they do bring in actors and they do all these things and stuff like that. But like you can tell that their focus isn't on that. Like as much as they can put like AAA characters or, you know, actors in there, you know, they had Jon Snow in the last one. Before that, they had what's his name? The dude.
The last one.
The dude that was in Advanced Warfare, House of Cards guy.
Oh, Kevin Spacey.
Kevin Spacey. There we go. Yes, they had Kevin Spacey in there. So they had like big name people involved in the project, but
right.
They were short, simple characters, and I think the actors were there more so to just have an additional pull for that single player.
Oh yeah.
Like they were like drawing at straws to see what would happen.
I was making like, you know, a freaking AAA movie, you know, Michael Bay, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Crazy actors, crazy explosions, crazy things. You want to play this game. I guess it got to the point where it was just more of a marketing ploy than anything.
Yeah.
Like, we got this really awesome story with great actors.
This is our promo content.
Right.
You buy it for the multiplayer game.
So, exactly, yeah.
Like from a Call of Duty perspective, like clearly their motivations aren't there. So obviously it's going to suffer. And then obviously like you just, I mean, I would be okay with Call of Duty not having single player anymore because it hasn't been good in a while. Like they haven't done a very good job with the single player campaign. Advanced Warfare was pretty good. I know you said
too.
At the point Infinite Warfare was like the best thing you played all year. So like you were all about that. And
I was a little drunk when I was talking. No, it was fun. I guess for that, like that game was a lot more exciting and more. I enjoyed it way more than I anticipated I would.
Yeah.
Being in that setting. Because normally, you know, Modern Warfare 2 for me was like the cream of the crop.
Right.
Like it hit its peak and then it just went all downhill from there.
Right.
So playing that, like I think it was interesting world, interesting characters, interesting story. Not crazy. Not anything like God of War, obviously. But, you know, for the time, at that time, it was pretty good.
Yeah. But
so, I mean, I think it depends where they're going. Like what do they want? Do they want to tell a story? I think nowadays multiplayer is just a given. Multiplayer is where you make all your money. Multiplayer is where you have people keep coming back. You know, I mean, more or less, that's what Destiny wanted to be, this like crazy multiplayer thing where they can make lots of money off of it. And we see a lot of games as a service as multiplayer.
Yeah.
Overwatch is a good example. Why do you really need a story?
Yeah.
You don't really need it. It only helps, obviously, them more than anything to throw little tidbits in there, but it's not a full-blown campaign, which I guess if you look at it, more or less, I don't think it would really help them at all.
Yeah.
Because how do you translate that single-player gameplay from multiplayer when it's already supremely dynamic and involving and interesting and fun to play?
You know, it kind of goes back both, like in both directions, because, you know, we're talking about earlier with God of War. If you listen to the podcast, you can hear our talk on God of War. But when we're talking about God of War, like it's single player only, right? And you can tell that was like they had a focus in that, in the characters between Atreus and Kratos. And like that was their focus. And when it comes to like a Call of Duty game, there isn't a clear focus. Like they have these three pillars and all of them have some attention, but like,
one of them is zombies.
I feel like what should happen, and zombies, but I feel like what needs to happen is they need to put the majority of the focus on that one thing and make that really good.
Then
that game overall will be a better game. So in this case, I think dropping off the single player, the zombies is good. Like, I think it's a cool component, but for me, I also think that's an unnecessary component to it. Like, if they put that extra effort into making more modes within the multiplayer world.
Yeah, refining it.
Because
the zombies become a huge part of the game. Like, they always have zombies.
Yeah.
And it's always something pretty, like, I mean, I'm sure they have a whole other team working on that, but still, like, that's other resources, other people that could be using somewhere else. I mean, given they do make that pretty good aspect of the game already, so.
Yeah, but I think even, like, the zombies, like, that is something that I feel like they could, like, branch off into its own thing. And it could work. Like, I mean, we were talking about like,
yeah, I can see that.
Like, I bought a single player, multiplayer campaign that had several types of game modes, lots of maps, like really, really interesting. Like, I would pay a good amount for that and then release like the zombies side that maybe the single player team was working on, that they now work on the zombies and make zombies more realized. Because really, zombies ultimately is just wave based stuff. There's kind of a story to it, but not really.
Right.
But they could build more maps. They could maybe build some story beats into it.
I think so.
Make that more realized. That could be interesting.
But I think they've gotten this area, Call of Duty, has gotten like... Because zombies is one of the pillars you're talking about, right? Maybe not.
Oh, yeah.
Zombies is one of the pillars.
Yeah.
Single player, multiplayer, zombies.
Yeah.
It just makes sense that is its own story thing. And they just... Like you were saying, just split it up. I think it makes sense for Call of Duty. I think not having a single player makes sense for certain games. And Call of Duty is one of those games that's evolving into, like, when you're telling me a lot of your friends buy Call of Duty just to play multiplayer. And at the time, like, this was several years ago, and I was like, that's mind-blowing. Like, why would you not want to play the single player? And yeah, it makes sense now. Like, the single player is not that great. Now, Call of Duty Black Ops 1 was actually pretty good, right? That was one with the crazy story of Vietnam and stuff like that.
All the numbers and shit.
Like, that was actually an interesting story. But, you know, it's only far and few between who you're going to get to write it. At this point, it's just become a money-making machine. Like, there's no real reason in the sense of making money and as a company, as an industry, or its own, like, title to, like, continue doing single player. Now, I mean, taking that away, will that just increase multiplayer? I have no idea. Obviously, it's yet to be seen. Do you think they would significantly increase the reach of their multiplayer if they took away single player?
No, I don't think the reach will change. I think they'll have the same.
You think it'll be more dynamic? I mean, think of like PUBG. Like, it's starting. Obviously, now it's going down, but like at first, you know, it was. A lot of people were
like
coming
to
flocking
to
it
on to making it better. Like, would
they? I don't want to say revitalize.
Play it.
Yeah. I mean, obviously they could polish it more, but like,
yeah. I mean, it could have some benefit. I mean, because that's really what Call of Duty needs. Like, if you look at, I mean, Call of Duty's story hasn't gotten any better. I feel like they're just turning out the same thing every year, and they're not putting a lot of different twists onto it. Like World War II, the story to WW2 was okay. I mean, it was an exciting campaign, but the tropes to it were very similar, where like you enter an area, you shoot a bunch of bad guys until they're all dead, and then you move to the next area.
Right.
And the multiplayer was good, but I felt like it was a little too confined for what I'm like used to World War II multiplayer being. And they botched the headquarters stuff when they first launched it and stuff like that. Those things probably could have been improved upon had they not been working on that other component. So maybe, yeah, they could, but what they really need to do is if they're going to focus in on multiplayer, they really have to focus in on it and they need to innovate upon it because they haven't really done much innovation in the multiplayer realm in a while.
Yeah, it's the same.
So maybe this battle royale will help it. I don't know, but I don't think that's the direction they need to go. I think they just need to, it needs to be a more grounded competitive shooter that is like, I don't know, something like what Overwatch did. Overwatch took the first person shooter formula and like flipped it on its head with the introduction of MOBA style elements to the game, which Battleborn tried to do too, and they failed upon. But like Overwatch did really well in that they built, they didn't need single player because they made such interesting characters that kind of filled that void that people wanted. And Overwatch itself, like I can play that game over and over again and not get bored. And it's just that loop. I don't know what it is about the loop, but the loop is really exciting. Whereas in Call of Duty, I feel like I spawn and die, and I'm just doing the same repeated thing over and over again. I guess, yeah. I feel like I'm getting more, I'm learning or getting better in Overwatch than I do with Call of Duty.
Right, yeah. And, it was more tactics. I mean, there's a lot more to think about in Overwatch.
Yeah.
Unless, you know, way more to think about in Overwatch.
Oh, yeah.
Besides spawning, shoot, throw grenades, run around here. This,
and it's,
you know,
teamwork, too. That's a big part of Overwatch. Super also focused. Is that although you can be a solo player, it is crucial that you are working with your team. Call of Duty, there is no team to Call of Duty.
Unless you're playing with your friends.
Well, even still, like, it's totally solo. Like, it used to have the team base. Like, back when they had, like, Search and Destroy and stuff like that, like, it was crucial that you had a solid team to play tactically and figure out your placements and making sure you're covering all the points and all that stuff. That stuff's all gone. They made it too fast-paced,
right?
Too tight, and now it's like the word team in Call of Duty isn't a thing. Yeah. That's why it's not. Yeah. It's never made it esports level anymore because there is no team-based component to it like there should be. I mean, they have an esports exposure, I guess, but it's not like CSGO or, you know, any of those other games out there where the team component is so crucial.
So I'm curious right now, off the top of my head, like they keep making these Call of Duty games. Like obviously people want them. People play them. Lots of people play them.
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, cause there's like, so many console owners out there that like they buy two things. They buy Call of Duty and they buy sports games. And that's like a whole huge market of people that exists.
So I have here, I guess, okay, this is ranked by top sells in the millions. Modern Warfare 3 had 30.7. Black Ops, the first one, had 30.4. Black Ops 2 had 29.58. And then Ghost had 28.1.
So surprised Ghost had that many because Ghost was like the worst one of all of them.
So let's see which has the least. Let me pull this up. Man, there's a lot.
Heck yeah.
No way.
Well, yeah, I mean, because that was back when gaming wasn't as popular as it is now.
Okay, so Call of Duty in 2003 had 0.01 million sales.
I remember that was PC only as well.
Ah, I gotcha.
It wasn't until Call of Duty 2 that it came out on Xbox 360.
Okay. Huh, Modern Warfare 2 only got 25 million. That's surprising.
Yeah.
Anyway, obviously people want these kinds of games. People like these three pillars that Call of Duty seems to be stingent on sticking with. So I don't know. I mean, I feel like they would lose some of their player base if they actually split that up.
I'll be honest with you. Most of the people I talk to about Call of Duty, when I say, do you play single player in Call of Duty? Like, what do you do in Call of Duty? I would say 9 times out of 10, they buy it for the multiplayer and that's it. Like, I'm one of the few people that like wants to play the single player anymore. Most people are buying it for that. And then you got like a portion of people that buy it for zombies too, just to have some co-op with their friends. But the majority of them are buying it for multiplayer. Like, that is probably what 90% of the sales account for.
So why do you think they keep the single player in there then? Just because that's just how they've always done it? Like, why break that cycle? Or
yeah, I mean, they play with it for a long time, but I know there's a vocal minority that wants it to stay there because they like it. They like the story beat. Like,
yeah,
people do like Black Ops story stuff that they've developed. They like Modern Warfare. Advanced Warfare. Like, I don't expect to see an Advanced Warfare 2 because I don't think that story was enough to compelling enough to keep going. I don't see an Infinite Warfare 2. Like, Black Ops is that franchise that could do it. Modern Warfare did, but that I'm glad they killed it when they did, because Modern Warfare 3 to me was garbage. But yeah, so there's a lot of it's just Call of Duty just needs to focus on multiplayer. Like, that's what people buy it for. They need to stick with that and go with it. However, there are other games out there that you can make a case for single player, you know, campaigns. Like, Wolfenstein's a perfect example. But that's another example of they just did single player.
True.
And it was
true.
So good.
True.
Because their focus was on single player, and that was it.
Right.
They had a multiplayer in there, it would have been a little bit different. And that's why, like, Assassin's Creed, whenever they introduced multiplayer to Assassin's Creed, you started seeing it go downhill a little bit. And from then on, it was like multiplayer.
Same with Halo.
Yeah, same with Halo.
I would say after, well, technically.
Well, I mean, Halo was multiplayer at
Halo
the beginning.
But it wasn't like online multiplayer like we see now.
Yeah,
like, before it was just local multiplayer.
Yeah.
Halo 2 was the first, like, online multiplayer. And then, you know, from that point on, just, I mean, we see, like, multiplayer is a thing right now. Like, that's the majority of where people play, I think. They want to play online. They want to play with other people. There's got to be a balance here. You know what I mean? Like, what's the balance? Like, who's done it good in the last, like, 5 years? Who's done good single player and good multiplayer? I really can't think of anything on the top of my head right now. I mean, you could say Overwatch, but they technically don't have a single player campaign.
I mean, you can make an argument for Destiny in a way, sort of, but the single player wasn't that great. It was there.
Yeah, you can't make a case for that.
It was interesting, but
maybe you can't. If there's a game out there, y'all listening or watching, please send it to us. Tweet us at the InnerGamer.
Cast. At InnerGamerCast.
Thank you.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. I can't think of anything really.
I can't either. Like, both. It just does, nothing stands out really.
And again, that's what it comes back to. It's like they need to go either or. Like, you can have a great first-person shooter single-player campaign, but that's what it's got to be. And, or you can have a great multiplayer, but it's got to be multiplayer. Like, you can't
do both.
I
guess you can say Doom, but not even a lot of...
Doom's multiplayer sucked.
No, I heard a lot of people actually liked it.
No, it was terrible. It's terrible, man.
Really?
It's terrible.
I mean, I know early on people were like, but after that, I felt like people were...
I mean, it got played and stuff like that, but, like, nobody talks about Doom's, like, multiplayer.
Yeah, I mean...
Like, the conversation was centered around, like...
Yeah. You don't have a lot of people playing it. I don't know. I guess you just can't have it. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, that's why Quake Champions came out. Like, it's just multiplayer. Yeah. So, they focus on that. Rainbow Six Siege was just multiplayer, and that's why that eventually became successful. Let's see what else. You know, Left 4 Dead 2 was just multiplayer. There was some story. If they can mix story in with the multiplayer, that could work. But
it's not really multiplayer. It's more co-op. Left 4 Dead.
That's still multiplayer. But
I mean, yeah, you can get people coming in with you online.
Well, I mean,
but
you have multiple people playing, so it's like multiplayer.
I don't know. Whatever your definition is, I don't know.
Yeah, it is more co-op. But yeah, I don't know.
It's hard. I really can't think of anything. I guess I could argue Battlefield 1 that it actually had a pretty decent single player.
Yes. Okay.
But it was very limited. It's not like what I'm used to.
But I think that was
smart
for them, though.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Small piecemeal experiences.
Right.
Like that works for them, because then they can, like, just isolate themselves. They don't have to tell, like, a super long overarching story.
Right.
They just tell little snippets of nuggets of story. Yeah. And that.
And it helps that it was actually history, you know?
Yeah.
They didn't have to dig too much, like God of War,
yeah,
to pull up the story.
Yeah. Come up with a whole new scenario or whatever. Yeah, I'm trying to think.
I don't know. Maybe that is what we're missing. We're missing a good mesh of single player and multiplayer. Because imagine God of War, but multiplayer. But building that single player, building that universe, and then transposing that into a multiplayer sense where you already have kind of knowledge of a background and a universe and characters. I think that would be really awesome. Don't make God of War multiplayer. Don't do that. I'm just saying,
I mean, that's what I think Destiny was trying to do, because, like, you play the single player to understand the lore and the history of the world that you're playing multiplayer in.
Right.
But
that's two meshed together, almost like separate entities, like Call of Duty, where it's like, I'm going to go play multiplayer. That's its own thing, but in the same world as a single player. Obviously, that's what it is right now, but I think you're just like, oh, I'm in like current times, or I'm in, you know, there's not a lot of lore building in Call of Duty in any of them.
Yeah.
Minus maybe this last one, which dealt with World War II. But I mean, if you read a history book, you kind of just know.
Did you ever play Uncharted multiplayer?
I did a little bit, yes.
Apparently some people really like that. Mm-hmm. I never played it, but
it was fun.
I knew that there was a thing to that. But that's another one of those ones where I'm like, I feel like they would have been fine without doing it.
Yeah, they would have been
like
fine without
it.
Leave
it out and not worry about it. And so, I mean, everybody bought that for the single player component.
Right.
Ultimately.
Yeah.
But I don't know. With I would say that, you know, there's a question of would we ever miss single player if first person shooters never had it again? And I think we would. I think there's a place for it, but I think it needs to be the focus if they're going to do single player. Otherwise, just don't bother with it.
Right.
Because, I mean, but the hard part is these days, like, most people need that multiplayer component so they can keep that residual income coming back with, like, loot crates.
And that's how you keep people...
DLC and all that stuff. So,
it's tough.
It is tough.
I guess there's... I don't know. I guess we really haven't found a balance. I thought we might find an answer of some kind, but
I know. Yeah,
it's kind of like up in the air.
It's a case by case basis. It's like if you're going to do a first person shooter, you have to decide in the first meeting, is this going to be a single player or multiplayer game? It can't be both. You got to divide it in some way.
I guess you could argue Grand Theft Auto 5 is actually a good mesh of that.
People
keep coming back for that, but people did love the campaign.
The campaign, that's a special case for sure.
Yeah.
Because like it was... That's just some magical powers, like some voodoo met shit or something like that. Because the fact that they were able to make such a huge developed single player and then have GTA Online that became like a powerhouse explosion of chaos and awesomeness, like that's impressive. But then you got to look too, you know, when GTA Online first came out, it wasn't as popular as it is now. Like I felt like it got better with time.
Which is crazy.
That's a good idea though. Yeah. Is like make a really badass story, put the early workings of an online out there, or just release it later. Like make a DLC later on. Like, hey, you buy a game, $60 game. Let's focus on making that game badass, right? And then say 2 months later, bam, here's multiplayer in this game as DLC, free DLC, and then put like all the like the microtransactions and stuff in there, like GTA Online does. To make all the extra money.
Boom.
Like that could be a good solution. Or to build multiplayer afterwards. Yeah.
No, I dig it. Yeah. Just focus on one first and then build the other one out later.
Yeah.
As a perk
model.
And
that keeps your game lasting longer.
Yeah, exactly. So currently 14 minutes ago on Steam, when we're recording this, over 50,000 people are playing in the last 24 hours.
Concurrently.
In the last 24 hours, almost 67,000. And then the all time peak was 360,000.
It's not bad.
I think those are pretty good numbers.
Yeah. And that's PC too. So I think there's probably more people playing on.
Well, yeah, most likely more on Xbox
stuff. Granted, PC, I mean, if you do have Grand Theft Auto and you have PC, you should get to it on the PC version because it's like modding is legit in Grand Theft Auto Online.
Yeah.
There's good shit there.
Oh, yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Anyway, so, I think we got something here.
Yeah.
We got some kind of conclusion.
Yeah. No, I think that's a good plan is, either focus on one or the other, or if you are going to do one and the other, in today's day and age, it's expected that content is going to release afterwards. Like that's what you want from a game because that's going to keep the game alive longer. Save the multiplayer until afterwards. Build up that game, make it badass, make it perfect, make it great. Start playing the systems maybe when you're about, like you're in the bug tweaking phases. And then that way, when you launch a game within the first 3 to 6 months, you have a multiplayer you can release.
Right.
And then also, that's a good plan because, you know, if people didn't buy the game at the onset in single player, you're going to get them to buy it 6 months down the line. You keep that residual income coming in even further.
Right.
Which is cool.
Exactly.
So there is some value to that.
So what are your thoughts? Let us know. Tweet us at the Inner Gamercast.
That's at InnerGamerCast.
At InnerGamerCast.
Just don't listen to Austin or anything. Just go to theinnergamer.net and there's links everywhere for all the social channels.
I was going to start saying that from now on. I don't know. Any of our social channels. Social channels.
Words. Words are difficult. I'm sorry.
I'm firing myself.
Yeah, exactly. That's funny. Okay. So yeah, if you have any opinions or suggestions or thoughts on single player games, first person shooters being single player, let us know. that's going to conclude our discussion topic this week. If there's something that you want to hear us talk about, you should email us at hello@theinnergamer.net, and we might talk about it on a future podcast. Also, don't forget to check out the video of this segment every Thursday, maybe, at youtube.com/theinnergamer.
You're listening to The Inner Gamer.
All right, that's going to wrap up our show this week. We have no new games to talk about, so be sure and check us out next Tuesday for more from your favorite video game podcasts. Visit theinnergamer.net for our latest episodes, blogs, videos, and social channels. If you like what you hear, please leave a review on iTunes or tell a friend. And also, April 27th, come out to see us at Community Brewery in Dallas, Texas. We'll be there playing video games, and it's going to be awesome. So we hope to see you there.
We also have a Patreon set up, for which is a way for you, our listeners, to donate to the cause in order to bring you all the great content you want to see and hear. Even $1 a month, $12 a year, will help us keep this content coming to you every week. Plus, if you support us here, there are some awesome rewards waiting for you, such as a guest, being a guest on the podcast, or getting exclusive content. So head on over to theinnergamer.net, theinnergamer.net. What is it, Brett?
Theinnergamer.net.
And click donate to contribute. I'm Austin Morales.
I'm Brett Yanosky.
And you've been listening to The Inner Gamer.
We only have two of us. I have to think of like a different way to do that.
I'm gonna go get some more.